Welcome to the Cheeky Investor Podcast. This episode, Gareth and I are going to talk you through a step-by-step guide for investing in IPOs. And towards the end, we're going to pick an IPO that's coming up each, and we're going to walk through the numbers on that. Gareth, not a lot of people in this game talk about IPOs. It kind of gets written off as kind of too much of a gambling investment.
IPOs are evil. Yeah, it's a funny one, I think, Phil. We've certainly covered it in the past. We always get great interest. People really see it. People that understand them, in some respects, understand the power of an IPO. But you're right, there's a lot of bad press around IPOs. Why is that, do you think? Is it just that people have been burnt?
Oh, it's a bit of that. People get burnt, but particularly, you know, the first week, if not the first day, IPOs are really, really volatile, because what you're getting is a lot of really wealthy people and investors who got on board early. They're offloading their stock. You've got amateurs that are really excited jumping into the market. So there's a lot of volatility, and it makes people really nervous. So they don't think properly when they see the stock skyrocket or plummet, and they can do that in the week. But you know, when we go through the framework that we will today, you'll understand that if you've got a good business and you move beyond that first, let's call it month, after that, it can certainly be a very lucrative investment, particularly getting in at that early stage.
Yeah, no, awesome. I'm with you completely. Well, look, rather than spend too much time talking about that, I think we just crack into what you need to be looking at, what anyone who's listening to this needs to be looking out for in IPOs to maximize the chance of success. So maybe if I'll go first, Phil, and then we'll kind of do a little bit of a backwards and forwards.
I might just give a bit of background around how IPOs work.
Good idea. Yep.
So yeah, it's a way for the company to raise money. You start with a concept in your mind. You might go raise some seed capital. You might raise $500,000 to take your idea to the next level, and then you generate revenue and you generate users, and then you might go raise a Series A where you get $10 million, and then you go through all these different stages of investment in private equity, and that's where you're getting private investors on board. And then it comes to the point where you've got this proof of concept, but you want to raise a mass amount of money. You've kind of tapped out the private equity markets, so you get a list on the stock market. And that's where you can raise. Facebook, for example, raised about $16 billion. You know, for them to do that amongst private investors, it'd be pretty difficult, even in Silicon Valley. So they go to the open market. So the way that they do that is they can issue more shares, and the people that got in early can sell their shares as well. Now, there's always this misleading thing that happens with IPOs is if you're an early investor in the IPO, you get offered an opportunity to buy the stock at a discount. So they might say, we're looking to list at 25 cents a share. That means it'll trade for 25 cents a share on that day. But if you're an early investor and you get in now, you can buy it for 18 cents a share, because you kind of get early access to that deal. So when we see all this news information come out and they say X company jumped by 40% on day, it's 40% from what the private investors got involved in originally, not necessarily that new amount.
Right.
And a lot of people misunderstand that. They think that they've missed the boat, or something hasn't added up. But you can't actually get access to that unless you're kind of within that deal frame. So I just want to clear that up before we dive into.
That's very cool. No, that's good. I wasn't aware of that either, and that's always the headline. In the news, Facebook or whatever jumps up by X amount. That's right. That's always the way it leads. I'd always assume that was just because of interest in it. It went up and then people started to sell the shares. But that's really interesting. That's good you've cleared that up, Phil, actually. That's really good. Yeah. Well, look, let's go through a couple of kind of the key things, the key things you need to look at with IPOs. The first thing for me is you really need to understand the business. So Warren Buffett, he's very much into this idea of remaining within the circle of competence. So he won't invest in something he doesn't understand. He's only recently understood Apple, hence why he's actually started to invest in it, even though Apple has obviously seen a huge, huge increase in profit. But for anyone that's looking at an IPO, I would always say, understand the business in which that company is that you're looking at. If you don't understand it, you're going to have difficulty in understanding if it's something that's going to work or not, or if that public listing is going to be beneficial or not to you. So as a very base position, get into the sectors you understand. You know, most people nowadays get tech, you know, they understand how Apple works, they understand how Google works, you know, how are they making their money? What sort of products do they have? Just get a basic sort of sense of what that company is. I wouldn't look at, you know, things in lithium mines, because I know nothing about lithium mining, about the risks associated with it, even though lots of people on Facebook will tell you it's the place to go invest in. I wouldn't be doing that. You know, for me, yes, I'd be looking at household stocks, or I'd be looking at things like tech stocks. So understanding the business is, to me, is one of those sort of key things before you get into any more detail about IPOs, is the a good way to kind of lay a good groundwork for determining if an IPO is going to be successful or not.
And when we talk about the business, it might seem simple, and it is, but understanding how they make money and is that way that they make money ever going to be profitable? And I think Uber kind of comes to mind with that, and it's certainly been burnt in its IPO from, what was that, a year, 2 years ago now, since I think?
Yeah, it was a year ago, market. I think, isn't it? Yeah, yep.
Obviously they, you know, they ride-sharing app, but their biggest expense is the fact that they've got have to pay wages, have to pay human beings to to deliver the other person to their destination, which is a big expense. And they listed on the stock market, making a loss. So as an investor, you've got to think, you know, is this something that's eventually going to make money? Am I getting in at a good time? And when they do make money, it's just going to skyrocket? Or is this just going to be a real battle for the next 5 to 10 years, and they're really still starting to prove their concept? And there's no real way that you can work that out, but it's just, you know, putting on your business hat and thinking as a consumer and looking at some of the numbers as to whether this will actually be profitable or not.
Yeah. Look, I think that's hugely important, understanding the risks in general with an IPO. Uber, Airbnb, two great examples. With Uber, they've sort of come out and said, look, you know, we're not going to be profitable for a long time. They're putting a lot of money into AI. The issue they have is they have to pay drivers. So they're looking for a way to get around to create, AI, but also driverless cars. So Uber, you know, they're sort of a high risk business. Now, Can Uber be replicated across the world? Well, yes, absolutely it can, and it has been. Where else can Uber go? Like, what else can they do besides running the cars? Airbnb would be the opposite in my view. You know, Airbnb, they've got a bit of a sort of unique situation. There are other companies that can do it, absolutely, but they also have the opportunity to get into the vast different areas of travel. So the experiences, which is what they're doing now. So they're not just, you know, doing rentals. So they're, you know, experiences, they can get into vehicle rental, they can get into private travel, they can get into business travel. There's all these sorts of areas. So I think understanding, you know, the current market environment for that business, things like the number of competitors and what their service is, how good it is. Uber has been smashed quite a bit for you know, its service. And a lot of competing companies have come out specifically on the grounds that they have a better service than Uber. That's their line. That's their marketing line. And then also things like company-specific risks, you know, what's actually happening within the company itself in terms of where they're putting money and what could happen. All of that information is available online. You can go and look at the prospectus for the IPO, and there, that is a lot of information in there. And also just doing general search, as Phil says, just getting out and putting on that business hat and using a little bit of common sense. I think that's, again, is hugely important. And we've spoken about Uber and our view on Uber, and we've spoken about other stocks, and we've gone through that process of risk analysis. We've actually done a podcast on this. So if you want to check back through our podcast, you can listen to see how we've gone through that process. And it's very simple, but it's hugely important, because it really does help you cut out those riskier IPOs, in my view.
I think my one is very similar. It's a really good segue to your first one. And that's how unique that business idea is. Like, how big are the barriers to entry for that market? And sticking with the Uber example, I mean, Uber's a pretty cool concept, but it appears it's not that hard to replicate. We've had Lyft, we've had, what's the one here?
Diddy.
Yeah, there's a whole heap that have come out, and as soon as that starts to happen, and Uber's biggest thing is price. Like, they took on the taxi industry because it was cheaper fares. Yep. The software was cool, but at the end of the day, it was cheaper. Now, when you're out to dinner or you've been out for a few drinks and you go to your Uber app and it's surge pricing and it's going to cost you 150%, it takes absolutely zero convincing to go find a cheaper alternative. You're not that loyal to Uber or to that experience that you're going to pay 150% more than someone else. So when you're investing in these companies, again, it goes back to knowing business, but it's about how, you know, what that competitive landscape is like. And the same thing is, like, I think when Snapchat, although they're doing kind of okay now, but they certainly got hammered to start, Snapchat had a cool sort of feature or a cool business model. But for Facebook / Instagram to replicate that isn't actually that hard. You know, there's nothing really proprietary there. And Facebook actually has a habit of doing that. They'll offer to buy companies out. And if they kind of refuse, they'll just mimic their own version.
Yeah.
Anyway, so investing in something like Snap, it's not that hard for these established companies to say, well, that's a good idea. You've shown that it works. We're going to put our own version together. And thank you very much. So I think a lot of investors in Snap were burnt. Whereas one that I liked and got involved with was Pinterest. And people were thinking, you know, not another social media app or not another, you know, online image sharing app. But the difference with Pinterest was they had their niche. They had their niche market that they appealed to. But that is really, really hard for anyone else to replicate. Like Facebook couldn't go out and start a Pinterest element. Like their platform's not designed for it. Instagram, possibly. But Pinterest have got people, they've got their own boards, they've got their own inspiration things, they've got people that they follow, they've got, it's so ingrained with what they do. Even if someone did come up with an alternative solution by creating an algorithm and scraping the internet for images, it'd be hard because people have personalized it. They've got their own profile.
That's right. They've got a community. Saved. Yeah, they've got a community. Yep.
So that's why that's a real difference. It's hard for someone to replicate that. So you want to first understand the business model, and then second, you want to make sure that they're a leader in the space, and it's hard to replicate what they do. It's not just at a risk of being a commodity.
Nice. Yeah, very good, very good. The next one from me is then moving past the idea of looking around the company in terms of the competition and what the sort of company does, and actually looking a little bit deeper into the company itself. And that's looking at the management. Hugely important to understand who is running the company, who's involved in the running of the company. You know, you want to be considering things like, do they have prior experience in the industry? How long have they been with the company? How much are they getting paid? What does the board look like? Is it a mix of people, or is it, you know, is it a load of family members for the guy that set the company up, or what's the sense of that? You could do a huge amount of research. Again, Google search is great. A lot of people who are on boards, they're going to have a pretty extensive online portfolio. And you can also do a lot of reviews on who is the CEO, the chief executive, or whoever it is at the top. And the thing is, you know, look out for things like, is there negative press about anybody on the board, or particularly the chief executive officer? You know, one or two little kind of comments is fine. But if there's a huge amount of different evidence in relation to this person and maybe previous businesses that they've been involved in, that to me would be a huge red flag. The opposite to that is you look at somebody, and we talk about him fairly regularly, Alan Joyce of Qantas, Australia's national airline carrier. Airlines are notoriously difficult to manage and run. Alan Joyce took over the airline after the GFC and managed to steer them through one of the hardest times they've ever had, and brought them out of being a bit of a failing airline into a very successful airline. They were certainly, in terms of quality and in terms of the business acumen, they've been one of the best run airlines in the world. We've now got COVID, and admittedly, he's facing even harder, much harder problems than he was. But if we think about, here's a guy who has a proven track record, he's a passion for the business, he's been with the company a long time. He's literally been in a very similar situation. He's proven that he can do it. I would have faith in him a lot more than someone that has come in the last couple of months, doesn't have a history of running airlines, doesn't necessarily maybe get it, you know, so just those sorts of things. The other thing, just as a bit of a thing to keep an eye on, is a lot of small companies will sometimes combine their chief exec and their executive chairman roles just to save money. That gives a huge amount of power. So both for someone running the business and also to make decisions in the business. So you have to think, if this is an IPO, what's going to happen if this person is basically going their own way on this? Could they cause problems? So that structure is hugely important in understanding more down the line. It's not necessarily an instant thing, but if you want to hold on to that stock, what's going to happen down the line with this company, and is it going to work?
But management's massive, and a little extra to what you're saying. Is if the founder is the CEO, like I'll go through some stocks. Facebook have got Zuckerberg. Apple had Steve Jobs. Microsoft have got Bill Gates. Google have got Larry Page. Amazon have got Jeff Bezos. Tesla's got Elon Musk. There's no coincidence that these companies are absolute rock star performers, and certainly from their IPO, they've been really successful. And the reason is, when you bring in, well, not always, but what can happen is when you bring in an experienced executive team, experienced business executive team, is that they lose that internal passion to see that project become a legacy. You know, we've seen Steve Jobs, he was sacked because, you know, he didn't make the best commercial decisions, but for him, Apple wasn't a commercial entity. You know, it was about changing the world through his tech and through his vision. And Elon Musk is very much the same. Like, he's always been at loggerheads with the board as well. And that's just something you can't replicate, or you can't bring in, regardless of the amount of business experience you have. And these companies where they've got a founder that's the CEO, they can do really, really well. So it's certainly something that I look for in a good IPO.
Oh, I like it. No, 100%, actually, that's a really important point, and it makes a difference. That's a simple thing. Is it a founder that's involved? Awesome. So the word for me then, another important point of the financials is to look at the actual valuation of the company. I mean, that's, you know, an important starting point. You can look at just the simple, you know, is it actually an overvalued company? You know, look at other companies that do a similar thing. Look at the market. What's that chart? You know, what are companies sort of valued in the market? So, you know, and this is one that's probably slightly less as a kind of a key consideration in my view, only because, particularly with the tech area, you know, intellectual property and a unique viewpoint and stance on something can actually give it a lot more value than you might get in a standard. But if you're looking at a standard household company, I would look at what the IPO, you know, you can download all the financials for that company, look at how much they're making, what their turnover is, what their profit and loss is, and look at what are they actually valued, and is that overvalued. Don't rely on the news or the media, because they'll spout lots of different things about valuations. Use a little bit of common sense. You know, if you're looking at a company that is producing a household cleaning product, let's say, for example, you know, there's a couple of big companies that do that. Well, look at how that company is valued for the products that they have, and compare that to Johnson & Johnson or to another company that's doing the same thing. And pretty quickly, you can get a sense of if they're overvalued or undervalued or where they sit. So to me, that is, you then, so we're sort of going through the process of, you start with the company, you look at then the management, and my view is just to then start to look at the details of actually what's on offer, because that will absolutely tell you. And again, you know, pretty quickly, you just use your good instinct. You'll get a sense of whether a company is actually overvalued or undervalued when it goes to IPO.
And what you want to do with that info is not get all that info from the person selling you the info. Like, the prospectus is a great place to get it. But at the end of the day, these companies that are raising money on behalf, these finance firms, they get 6% of the amount raised on the day. So they've got skin in the game to pump up the excitement of a company and justify 100%. Its valuation. So go through the prospectus in as much detail as you can, but then just, you know, kind of have a look at some other parties. But just last one for me before we go into our two stocks.
Cool.
Really quick, find out what they're going to do with the money. One of the craziest ones that I've seen raised in Australia here, listed on the stock market, and I went through their prospectus. I forget the exact details now, but it was something like, there was a few million that was going to be, it was probably like 25-30% of their funds was going to be expended on red tape and admin, just getting up to scratch with all the laws and the legalities, and they were giving the CEO a bonus of $1 million. Now, the reason that those are an issue is because they're not investments. They're not income-producing investments. And I'm certainly not against any of those. They need to be done. But they were just a large portion. I think it might have been close to 50% of their funds were going towards non-income-producing activities. So as an investor, you don't want to raise money to give someone a bonus or to pay for the legal fees of a company. You want to say this is going towards research and development, or we've got these five smaller companies that we're going to look to buy out and grow our user base, or, you know, we're looking to launch this new product and really need to scale up our marketing. You want to look for them to spend money on those income producing investments rather than just the dead money areas. So have a look for that. And that's all going to be detailed in the prospectus as well, what they intend to do with the money.
Nice one. I like it. Okay. So you've got all that now. What's your tip for the top, Phil, in terms of IPOs this year? I assume it's this year you're going for.
This year, providing that things...
Yeah, on the assumption that they happen, of course, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. For me, it's Airbnb. It fits everything that we've got. The founders are still the CEOs and the executive team. They're not the household names like Bezos, Zuckerberg and Gates, but they still fit that mold. I think it's bloody hard for someone to replicate that model. You know, the hotel industry is certainly a rival, but if you want that experience, that local experience of staying somewhere in town, affordable, and it just feels more homey, it's hard to compete with that. So I think they've got an established, established threshold in that area. And also don't mind their valuation. They're looking to be valued at about $18 billion, I think, is what their talks of are now. And Warren Buffett says, you can buy rubbish stocks, but don't buy rubbish companies. And what that means is, at the moment, it looks like a rubbish stock because no one's traveling. We're in the middle of a pandemic. It's still a great company. It's a great business, the way that it's operated. It's been able to scale and able to take market share. It's just at the moment that it's kind of, due to circumstances out of its control, it's taken a bit of a hit. So it was expected, around this time last year, they're looking to list for about $40 billion with its net worth because it's raised about $4.5 billion in venture capital. I think its last valuation was sort of around that $30, $31 billion mark. So if you can get in at $18 billion, that's sort of what it was valued at probably like 4 or 5 years ago. So I think that valuation is pretty good. It's taken a haircut, as most travel things have at the moment. So I like the valuation. And the one that really confirmed it for me was during this pandemic, they've stayed active and they've tried to adapt. Like if you jump on Airbnb now, they're pushing the experiences massively. Like they're advertising, you can cook pasta with nonnas over in Italy. And what they do is they have a private Zoom session for 8 people. They set up in their kitchen and you follow along cooking pasta and replicating that experience. Now, obviously, it's not as lucrative as the travel, staying in other people's accommodation, but it just shows that they're willing to fight and they're willing to be innovative regardless of what kind of happens, whereas other companies are just kind of frozen stiff at the moment. They're burning through money. They're, not focused on their end user. But these guys have adapted, or they've at least still provided some kind of relevance to the market. So I like that part, that they're able to innovate and adapt.
Oh, I love it. I'm a big fan. We're both big fans. We actually were talking about their IPO last year when it was supposed to happen and it never did. So I think that's a super one to go with. Mine's fairly different. But equally, I think there's great opportunity. It's Robinhood, which is the trading app. So Robinhood has a $7.6 billion valuation. It was the first company to operate with no fee trading. It's one of the first companies to get into cryptocurrency. It's always been a bit ahead of the game, and it's one of the largest trading apps, certainly in the US, operating now. It has the lion's share of the market. And really that's just by the fact that it is so ahead of the game in terms of what it's doing. So I think it has about a 30 bit. So where is this? So I was just looking at what their turnover is. It's pretty decent. I had it up before, but I can't find it, but certainly, that you're talking about a bit in the billions, of turnover. The founders are still there. They've had some trouble. They've had issues. Things like there was the suicide of Alexander Kearns, who was a user of the app, and they got caught with, there was infinite leverage. You were able to borrow any amount of money that you wanted. If you were a certain member, they stopped that. And there's been security breaches, but overall, I think as an opportunity, it's a, an area that's growing substantially and has done in COVID. And it's something that's only going to continue to grow as people seek out alternative ways to get money. And Robinhood, as I say, it really has a foothold in that trading app area, and has the power to change. It has the power to buy up other companies, and has the power to really dominate in a way, I suppose, that Google has managed to dominate the search sphere. So for me, I think that's another one to look out in. They are going to be, it is going to be sort of the end of this year, I believe. That's the IPO's talked about being launched, and I think it's there's an exciting opportunity there.
I think the thing that stands out there is that they're really ahead of the game. Like you said, they're first to do the no fees, they're first to get cryptos involved, first to allow you to trade off leverage. And all these bigger funds like, what was it, Fidelity? Was that the one that was next to follow with Zero? Yep. Like if they're leading the way for those massive companies, I really like that innovation space and the willingness to push the boundaries.
100%. Yeah, no, definitely. And get involved in different areas, a bit like what we're talking about Airbnb. So yeah, look, two interesting tips. Obviously, we can't guarantee anything's going to happen with them, but they're certainly ones that we're looking at. But more importantly, hopefully for everyone listening, you guys have got a bit of an understanding of what you need to look at for an IPO. It's not complicated, but it's the really, there's a process you want to go through. I'd even recommend just getting a checklist. It's literally writing down, okay, I need to look at financials. I need to look at manager. I need to look at all this stuff, because that will quite quickly weed out the bad IPOs. Phil rightly points out brokers and brokerage companies are pushing IPOs because they make a huge amount of money from them. So they will sell that IPO to the newspapers, and the newspapers or the news media will then sell it on to people, to gullible people that think, oh, this is the best investment in the world. You know, you're not going to do that. You've listened to our podcast. You're going to go, okay, I need to go through a process. And that's what you need to do. So look, hopefully there was benefit and sort of guided everyone who's interested in IPOs. What I'd say is, as always, if you need any more information, just get in touch with us. You know, shoot us a DM on Facebook. We're always around. We always answer very quickly. We're always really happy to answer any questions people have about IPOs or whatever. We've also got our website, so cheekyinvestor.com. You can get in contact with us there, or you can look at the different sort of things we have on offer to help you learn how to invest and trade. So thank you very much for listening to our podcast. It's the numbers are growing. We're absolutely delighted, and we really appreciate having you guys for the half hour that we do. So make sure to check us out next time. And yeah, hopefully we'll speak to you soon.